Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Alex Crook. Alongside me, I've got two former Hammers in Scott Minto and Dean Ashton. And here's what's coming up.
You know, look, Phil Foden has got to find a way to transfer that form because it's not Manchester City. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to just turn around and keep on moaning that it's not?
He'll have been sat there thinking, I hope we win and Watkins doesn't play well. As horrible as that sounds, that's what you think.
When it comes to Forest and Everton have their independent commission for their second PSR charge this very week, I think that will be sorted before the final round of fixtures. It simply has to be, otherwise it damages the brand. Well, this international break in particular just feels like it gets in the way of the run-in to the Premier League season. No games for us to cover this weekend. What did you get up to, Dino?
I just did what I love to do when I'm not watching football, which is still watch football. but it was nice, actually, just to be able to go with some mates, relax in the pub, bit of family time on Sunday as well, but obviously still made sure I watched some of the international football, albeit it is hard because the friendlies are what they say. They're time for players just to have the time away with the senior side. But at the same time, you know, don't want to get injured and I think are probably protecting themselves.
Scott, I know you were on with Darren Ambrose on Saturday, keeping across all the EFL action. You'd have had eyes on some of the international games as well.
Yeah, that's right, mate. I actually went to Colombia, Spain the day before at the London Stadium, and I was in the Colombian end, obviously, and took the missus and the kids, and the atmosphere was amazing. I mean, it was, the Colombians were just superb. I have to say, I was disappointed with Spain. They obviously didn't have their full strength 11 out, but they were typical Spain in the first half and pretty poor in the second. So it was a really good win for Colombia. The atmosphere, as I say, was incredible. I worked with Darren. He did really well in the daytime. It was a long shift, 1 till 6. That was long for him making his debut as a presenter. Then I went for a curry and quiz night, another school night. So I didn't watch the England game until Sunday. But it was a busy weekend in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Colombian Mrs. Minto, very happy with that scoreline in the East End. When England were playing Brazil, I was wandering around Bristol dressed as AP McCoy. Had to go at curling, actually, myself and Mr. Matterface, curling champions of the stag weekend that we were on. So we were quite happy with that. He's not here today, so I'm in the chair. And let's get stuck into some of the football that was on as England slipped up at home against the Brazilians.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
An iconic matchup that recalls Pele and Moore, Barnes and Hagley, Ronaldinho and despair. Ball over the top. It's a big chance of finishes. Pickford doesn't know whether to come out or not. The shot goes past the goalkeeper. Walker came back so speedily and swept up behind Jordan Pickford.
They will pick you off if you go in ones and twos.
More worryingly, from an England perspective, Kyle Walker is now down receiving treatment. Only had 2 wins in 13 games against sidetracked to the top 6 of the world under Gareth Southgate. Falls for Rodrigo, the left-footed effort comes back off the post. And Paquetá somehow hasn't scored.
Brazil certainly have been the more likely to break the deadlock.
Clear from Rafinha, then a left-footed effort from Paquetá. And Pickford's dive suggested he thought that was going to be close.
And Hendrick is going to be replacing Rodrigo. They reckon he's the next one off the conveyor belt. He is a massive talent in the making.
Finishes his goal side. And Pickford can't make the save. 1-0 Brazil with 10 minutes to go. Bundled over the line by Hendrick.
They look the most more likely to score over the 80 minutes or so that we've played.
It's England's first home defeat since 2020. It's their first home defeat in a friendly for 8 years.
England 0, Brazil 1. Bit of a surprise scoreline in many ways. I think most people fancied England to pick up what would have been a bit of a statement victory heading into the Euros in the summer. Brazil, without several of their first team regulars, didn't have a first choice or even a backup goalkeeper. So one of five debutants in net. But in the end, Dean, it was pretty comfortable for the visitors. They were the better side.
Yeah, I think they looked very, very dangerous on the break. I thought we looked really vulnerable, actually, especially once Kyle Walker went off with what looks like a hamstring tweak. And actually, Vinicius Junior was in behind him even, you know, when he actually did that injury. And I think that's a big worry in terms of what the best teams will look to do against England, which is expose our two centre-backs. And I think, again, it shows we are in need of pace at the back, because we're going to have players that that get forward, that look to attack, and teams can sit knowing we maybe haven't got that pace, especially if Walker isn't in the team. That was the biggest thing I took from the game, was that kind of weakness on the break for England, and the fact that we're still very, very good from set plays, very, very dangerous. And people might say, oh, well, we've got to do more than that, and we have. But it's such a great weapon to have going into a tournament. We can't forget how useful that was when we got to the semi-final of the World Cup.
Scott, that isn't going to change, though, is it, between now and Germany, that lack of pace, the heart of the defence in particular, because Harry Maguire, with the greatest respect in the world, he won't get any quicker between now and then. We haven't really got anybody putting serious pressure on Maguire, despite the fact that I think his form at club level maybe doesn't necessarily justify being a guaranteed England starter. Lewis Dunk obviously came on at the weekend. He came in for a bit of criticism for his part in the goal. Is this the big headache for Gareth Southgate? If there's one area in the team that is going to stop England going all the way in Germany, is it at the centre of defence?
Look, I think defensively is not our strongest department. You know, I found it interesting that everyone's sort of having a go at Harry Maguire. And yet, for that incident where Dino was talking about, that's actually Kyle Walker letting Vinicius Jr. go and him going in behind John Stones. You know, and then there was a chance with the goal, of course, where Harry Maguire wasn't even on the pitch. Again, Ezri Konsa. And I looked at it and I paused it as well at the point of the pass. And you could see the three players, our three players, were not even in the line. So there's no communication from Ezri Konsa to John Stones. And, you know, this is not just a Harry Maguire thing. This is are we able to communicate? And the art of communication seems to have gone a little bit from a right back who's not normally a right back to his centre back. And, I think it's slightly harsh. Yes, Harry Maguire made one mistake and Rafinha should have taken control of it. But whenever he's played in the tournaments, I think he's done really well. I think, again, he's a bit of a scapegoat, to be honest with you. And what they need is protection. And I think it probably what we saw in the game against Brazil was Gareth Southgate's argument, which is kind of against what I've been arguing for, because I want a 4-3-3, is that you need two pivots in there. You need two people to protect that back four. So, you know, Paquetar turning Conor Gallagher, they're not suddenly one ball in behind. So there's food for thought. I thought it was an interesting game. I thought we controlled the game, but in both boxes, they looked a lot better. And that is worrying.
A couple of worrying performances for me. Ollie Watkins, first and foremost, missed a really decent chance in the first half. I think that just highlights that when Harry Kane isn't available, I don't think we have somebody who can step up to the plate. Watkins has done brilliant in the Premier League this year, but he isn't Harry Kane. Ivan Toney on the international stage, we're yet to really see what he can do. And maybe more alarmingly, bearing in mind that I think he's possibly a contender for the Premier League's Player of the Year, Phil Foden. Another underwhelming performance from him in an England shirt. What did you make of those two, Dean?
I think it's becoming a regular theme that players that have looked fantastic in the Premier League have then gone to England and maybe not been able to replicate that exact form. That England aren't playing the same way as probably are with their club sides, and I think it's fair to say that Gareth Southgate isn't Pep Guardiola, if you're talking about Phil Foden. So there is that disparity, but we'd expect it to get closer than that. And I think obviously Phil Foden started on the right and drifted in, but never looked dangerous in the penalty area, which is where he's been looking so dangerous for Manchester City. Ollie Watkins, I think, it's a bit unfair. He's getting one opportunity. You know, Harry Kane have played 10, 15, 20 England games on the bounce. And then we'll see over that scope where he's at. Ollie Watkins has been absolutely brilliant in the Premier League. You don't do it to the level he has if you're not an outstanding player. I think it always feels harsh when you're giving one player one chance and you're saying, this is it. This is your chance. If you don't play well or you don't score, just for the record, by the way, that was actually brilliant defending. It wasn't a miss from Watkins. The defender whacked it against his foot. So I thought he was a bit harshly treated in that. But again, it's difficult when you're playing those games and there isn't anything on it. The pressure's on. That is England. That is England to a T. It's, you know, incredible amounts of pressure on a game sometimes that doesn't matter, and certain players may be protecting themselves. And I can understand why. Really, really difficult at times to then shine.
Dino's appraisal there on Gareth Southgate was more polite than some of the callers we had on TalkSport over the course of the weekend when he said he's not Pep Guardiola. Is the fact that Foden doesn't do it for England, is that a stick to beat Southgate with, that he can't get the best out of such a talented player?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, look, he's not Pep Guardiola. We know that. And England aren't Manchester City and they don't dominate in the way that City do. You know, the match stats say that they had 53% of possession, and even against Brazil, City probably would have had 60%. You know, look, Phil Foden has got to find a way to transfer that form, because it's not Manchester City. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to just turn around and keep on moaning that it's not? Or are you going to find a way to do it? He started on the right. That's really probably his best position. Or he's come out and said that. I personally like to see him down the middle, but he did play number 10 then when Bellingham went off. And he still, as Dino said, didn't find a way to really make a difference in the game. And he's got to be able to do that. And you look at Jude Bellingham playing in that position. You know, he was always getting involved. He was always finding pockets of space. If he was drifting out wide, he was putting balls in. You know, he was absolutely everywhere. And even if you just look at that sort of the short time that both played the number 10 role within the same game, Jude Bellingham was a lot more effective. And that's something which I think Phil Foden has to find a way to transfer that City form into England, because it ain't Manchester City. And what are you going to do about it?
Well, let's hear from Gareth Southgate now, who, unlike a lot of the country, he felt his side dominated the game and were the better team. He also had words of praise for some of the England debutants.
With about 10 minutes to go, I was thinking that, you know, we've had more than our share of the game. We've had as many attempts as they have had. Of course, with players in their attacking areas that they have, they're going to have those moments where they create something special. But we had similar moments, really, at the other end. And we'd seen a lot of players, either for the first time or for, you know, players who, excuse me, had very little England experience. So I was really pleased with some of those individual performances, both our regulars like Stones and Rice, who were both outstanding, but also people like Ezri Konsa, who came in for the first time, has to come on after 15 minutes, and Mark Vinicius. It's a really tall order. He did that really, really well. Anthony Gordon, excellent debut. So in the context of what are we trying to learn, what are we trying to improve upon for the summer, we take a lot from the game. Of course, when you lose, then there's always going to be negativity. But I've got to look, you know, at the bigger picture.
Gareth Southgate there reflecting on England's 1-0 defeat at home to Brazil. Let's talk about one debutant in particular. You guys know that I'm a massive fan already of Kobbie Mainoo. I was excited when he got the call up. I think he did his reputation the world of good when he came on. Unlike Conor Gallagher, who obviously wasn't a debutant, but maybe is one of those players who perhaps is on the borderline as to whether he'll actually make the cut for the tournament. What happens, Scott, if Kobbie Mainoo starts against Belgium, puts in another stellar performance? Does that enhance his chances of going and therefore maybe put Gallagher on the standby list?
Well, I think Gallagher would be there, whatever. But I still think that, you know, because Gallagher can play a couple of positions. He has done for Chelsea. But Colby Maynard, we spoke about this last week, didn't we? About, you know, we felt he should have been in the squad anyway. And OK, Gareth Southgate's put him in. I mean, how comfortable did he look when he came on? Especially with that little sort of pirouette turn when I think it's Joao Gomez wanted to get tight to him. He looked as if he's been an England international for 5 or 6 years. And Dino knows what it's like to try and embed yourself in. And I totally agree with the Ollie Watkins. A lot of pressure in one game. What are you going to do? And if Ivan Toney suddenly plays really well, looks like he's ahead of him now. It's unfair, but it is what it is. And with Kobbie Mainoo, I thought he was sensational. And he looks like that typical youngster that doesn't even realise he's playing for England and all the nerves. If he plays well, and I'd like to see him start against Belgium, then absolutely he can make a late run and be in the squad.
And is this what Gareth is looking for when he gives a young player like Mainoo a chance, Dean? Not necessarily his football ability, but his mentality, what he's been like in and around the squad this week, what he's like on the biggest stage of all at Wembley, playing against one of the most iconic nations. And he took it all in his stride.
It definitely feels like this sort of newer generation are coming in with less fear. That's how it feels to me. Bellingham's come in and owned it straight away. I know he's going to be, I'm sure, you know, when 10, 15, 20 years down the line, we're going to talk about Bellingham as one of the best ever for England. But just in terms of that mentality coming in as such a young player, Mainoo's done the same. He's done it at Manchester United. Now he's already shown it with England in a small cameo that they're not affected, it seems, by the pressures that maybe others feel with the national side. And I think that is important. I think it is something that Gareth will be looking at. And I think that, you know, going into Euros, I can't see why if he doesn't start against Belgium, and I expect him to and probably play well, that he'll have walked himself into this squad, because there is space in that midfield area. But it's difficult for Southgate when you think he's giving debutants now so close to the European Championships and players that we're still not sure on that have got international experience. I think it's a difficult one for Gareth in that sense.
And there's potentially only really one wild card slot, isn't there? You probably can't envisage a situation where he takes Kobbie Mainoo and Jarrad Branthwaite, for example. If he's going to take one young player to give them tournament experience, it is going to be either or, isn't it? Because probably we could sit here now and name, what, 20 to 23 man squad?
Yeah, I think in terms of those, one or two spots we're looking at, aren't we? And it depends on how Gareth sees it. I think the striker situation is going to be interesting, whether he drops a striker out and therefore gives that extra spot in midfield or in defence. I think from now until the Euros, injuries are going to be key also for some of those fringe players. It feels like Jarrad Bowen might be one of those also. Big decisions for Gareth. And you know, he's got to get it right. He'll know the pressure that he's under going to this tournament, because we all expect us to be extremely competitive and win it. Mm.
Throw in Anthony Gordon as well, you know, who you talk about debuts. I mean, I loved how he spoke as well, both before and after the game. And, you know, he always wanted to play for England. This was his dream. Afterwards, the best day of my life. There's your statement there. You know, okay, yeah. And I heard someone say he hasn't got married and had kids yet. But that's the best day of his life up until now. And the way he played and the way he spoke afterwards, you can tell he's not fazed by it. I think the question was after the game, you know, are you confident you can be in the squad? And it was a yes. I'm confident in myself. I believe in my ability. And I believe that I can do whatever I need to do in whatever game I'm in. And again, that mentality, I completely agree with Dino that there's a group of players coming up now that don't seem fazed by playing for England. And, you know, with the media on side and the majority of the public as well, it's still that sort of jeopardy about, you know, you're playing for your country in a major tournament, but they don't seem to be fazed by it. And Anthony Gordon's another one. I'm telling you now, there's a couple that have come in that have made their debuts and absolutely will leave Gareth scratching his head about what he does for that 23.
Before we look ahead to what the team makeup might be on Tuesday night, England live on TalkSport once again against Belgium. Talk to me about that left-back position, Scott. You know how important it is. Ben Chilwell, what did you make of his performance? Is he a player who looks more suited as a left wing back than a left back? And with Luke Shaw injured, is that another potential headache for Gareth?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Gareth said after the game he was really pleased with him. I think it's somewhere in between, you know, what people are saying about him and what Gareth said. Look, he's had a lot of injuries over the last couple of years, but this season as well. And I think that has been a problem. I don't think he's 100% match fit as yet. There were a couple of crosses that weren't too good. I thought he defended pretty well. I like him. I think he's good. And I think he's got that mentality as well. Is left wing back more suited? Maybe. But can he play left back? Absolutely. I really think he can. Yes, of course you want Luke Shaw fit and the two of them going. But I get the feeling that even if Ben Chilwell was fit and Luke Shaw isn't, Gareth may well go with Kieran Trippier if he's fit at left back. And as much as I think he's a fantastic safe pair of hands, there's no doubt about it. A left-footed player playing left back gives a lot better balance to the side.
Next up for England at Wembley, it is Belgium. Lucky not to lose the Republic of Ireland at the weekend. Our producer, Jeremy, is a proud Irishman. He's written in the script, they should be beating teams like Ireland comfortably. In fact, everybody in world football, he says, should beat Ireland comfortably. We might talk about Evan Ferguson and his penalty miss later in the programme. But what do we want to see from this game? Should Kobbie Mainoo start? We're assuming that Ivan Toney will come in up front. Branthwaite, maybe. Maddison tried out in the number 10 role. But what sort of 11 do you want from Gareth Southgate, Dino?
I think all of the above. I think it's a great opportunity. I think Mainoo's got to play for me to really see him in that role. I'd like to see him alongside Rice. I'd like to see Rice play again, if I'm honest. Why would you not play Branthwaite as that left-hand side centre-back, especially with Maguire leaving the squad and going back to Manchester United? Obviously, as a forward, it's Toney. It's going to be his. It feels like it's his opportunity. Obviously, Watkins got plenty of minutes against Brazil. It feels like Tony's going to get the same against Belgium. And as Scott said, as harsh as it is, and it doesn't feel fair, and it's not. But it's now his. He'll have been sat there thinking, I hope we win, and Watkins doesn't play well. As horrible as that sounds, that's what you think, because you think then. He's now got the opportunity to do something, score goals, play well, have a real influence and put himself possibly ahead of Watkins. If anything, just within the fans, the media's eyes from this international break to say everyone's got Toney on their lips rather than Watkins. And that's how brutal these international breaks are.
What about you, Scott? What are you hoping for on Tuesday night?
Yeah, do you know what? The words that came out of Dino's mouth, first of all, were exactly what I was about to say, all of the above. I think this is the one where you can experiment. And Ivan Toney, you know, again, Dino spot on. It's not that you want anyone to play badly. You just don't want them to play well. And, you know, Ollie Watkins didn't score. He didn't sort of run the channels and he wanted to. I mean, look, he was trying to do what he does for Aston Villa, whereas, you know, sometimes he's got to adapt his game to what's happening. And Harry Kane is not the athlete that Watkins is, but he finds a way of dropping off, playing, getting more involved and then getting into the box as well. So I think Ivan Toney has got a wonderful opportunity. I'd love to see Kobbie Mainoo start and that balance at the back with Branthwaite and his left foot. You know, I think this is the one where, despite us losing to Brazil, people will understand if it's an experimental side and we lose to Belgium, even if they didn't beat the Republic of Ireland, whatever Jeremy says. You just look at players. The one disappointing thing I'd say about Brazil, actually, I chatted with Adrian Durham before the show when I was on with Darren, and he was absolutely spot on about finding a way to win in the last 20 minutes. And by making the substitutes that we made, it's almost washing your hands of, well, we, you know, he played and he's played. And I get it. We've had positives like Kobbie Mainoo coming on. But the question mark against Gareth Southgate is, can he find a way to win a game when it's really, really tight? And we didn't find that against Brazil. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But I think this is the experimental side that I want to see.
You say the result isn't important. I disagree with that. I think if they lose both these friendlies, we know that Gareth Southgate enjoys an uneasy relationship with a lot of England supporters, maybe a lot of the England media as well. If they lose both matches so close to a major tournament, I think he could come in for a bit of stick. And this isn't a vintage Belgium side. We all remember how limply They exited the World Cup. They did only manage a draw against Ireland at the weekend. I think as much as it is probably going to be a chance for some of the fringe players to shine, I think they do need to win the game, Dino, at home against a pretty ordinary Belgium side.
They don't. They don't, because he's got to look at, he has to look at the players. He has to. And of course he'll want to win the game. And he's right. We had plenty of the game against Brazil without maybe being the best in the penalty areas. But it's not. I think it's so much more important that he gets to have a look at the players. Otherwise, what's the point in taking them? What is the point in taking these players and giving them debuts and not having a proper look at them if all you're worried about is the supporters being a little bit disgruntled when they already are anyway? And actually, probably take the pressure off slightly, because we'll all go, oh, well, we've got no chance now. You know, we can't beat Brazil second string, and we can't beat, you know, a poor Belgian side. So I think Gareth is strong enough to not worry about that and get out of this what he needs to, because he's got some really, really difficult decisions to make in the summer as to who is in that squad. You know, there's going to be some really disappointed players. And does he go with the tried and tested and those players? Or does he go with some fresh, new players that have only just come in? That's the big decision, and I think he's got to get that out of this break.
Crookie, from an aesthetic point of view, yes, of course, he needs to win after the loss. He wants to keep the walls from the door, and I'm thinking of you in particular. but it, honestly, he has to play the players. He has to. This is I don't know if it's the last game now before he names the squad, but he has to look at the players in the squad, because the next squad he kind of picks up is, he needs to kind of know what it is. So of course no one wants to lose, you want to win, but the most important thing in this particular game now is the final look at the players who could sneak through that door and get on the plane.
There have been a couple of additions to the squad over the course of the weekend as well. James Trafford and Rico Lewis have been promoted. Rico Lewis, who did so well when he got his chance last time around. James Trafford, one of the heroes of England winning the under-21 European Championships. That's because Sam Johnston has picked up a shoulder problem. Harry Maguire is undergoing a scan for a potential injury as well. And no Kyle Walker in the squad for Tuesday night. The Trafford one, Dean, very quickly, is a little bit surprising, because this was a young goalkeeper who signed for Burnley for big money. His reputation was enhanced by what he did at the under-21 championships. I don't think he's been great this season. Does that suggest a little bit of a lack of strength and depth in the goalkeeping departments, bearing in mind that most of Jordan Pickford's understudies aren't even number one for their clubs?
I think it's quite an easy decision for Gareth to then not throw somebody more senior in to maybe say to them, you have got a chance, when he knows they've not for the actual Euros. And if he's going to maybe take a third, he might take, you know, an under-21 goalkeeper. And he has done that, to be fair. He's done that throughout his time with England. He has very much promoted the under-21s. Whenever he can, he has done that. And I've loved that about Gareth, because when you're in the 21s, there's nothing worse than feeling like you've put in the work under 17s, 19s, 20, 21s. The whole thing that you're told is that you're getting the experience with England so that you can just seamlessly go into the senior side, to then just see journeyman players maybe get a few caps but not really feature. I think Gareth's just gone, we don't even do that. We promote the 21s and give them the experience. So to me, that's a plus, albeit Trafford hasn't been great.
A reminder, England against Belgium, live on TalkSport on Tuesday night. It's a 7:45 kickoff with Adrian and the team. OK, let's wrap up some of the other news knocking around the Premier League and beyond over the course of the weekend.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
And we'll start with Wales. They have a huge game in Cardiff on Tuesday night, a chance to secure their place at the European Championships. They take on Poland in a one-off playoff. Winner takes all. They were brilliant, Wales, in destroying Finland on Thursday. And what struck me, Scott, about this Welsh team now is they're not reliant on a superstar like Gareth Bale or even Aaron Ramsey. But I do think, quietly, they've got a little bit more strength in depth about their team now. They've got players like Brennan Johnson, who's playing regularly in the Premier League, players who are doing well at the top end of the Championship. Ampadu in midfield caught the eye. And I think Robert Page deserves a lot of credit for rebuilding a team without those two star names.
No, absolutely. I mean, like Aaron Ramsey's sort of back in the squad, but, you know, wasn't starting. And he hasn't been the sort of major star that he's been. And obviously with Gareth Bale gone, I think when you think about the pressure that was on Rob Page, because they were poor in the World Cup, really poor. And I don't know behind the scenes if there's still been patched up between him and the CEO of the Welsh Association, but I think this is a massive game for him. I really do. I thought they were excellent. I think he's done very well. I think no one can take the place of Gareth Bale, but Harry Wilson, I think, has been superb. You mentioned Ethan Ampadu, 50th cap in that game against Finland, the youngest ever for Wales. I wouldn't have said that. You know, you think of Ryan Giggs and even Gareth Bale himself, the youngsters that have come through, and Ethan Ampadu has done that. That's incredible. I think he's been brilliant. And David Brooks as well. You know, what a wonderful story for him to come back and score that opening goal after what he's gone through. So I think Wales are what they are. There are some of the parts. They've got some very good players. And again, what Rob Page has done, he's told a lot of the players who weren't playing regular football at the start of the season, you need to go out and find it. And there's a few that have gone out on loan, playing well. And I think we see that now reflecting in this particular Wales performance. But I tell you what, the Poland game, I'm glad it's at Wales because Poland have some very, very good players indeed.
Yeah, David Brooks, a case in point, actually, one of those players who wanted to go out and play regular football. Bournemouth certainly weren't pushing him out the door. In fact, I think Andoni Iriola wanted him to stay and be part of the squad, but he was determined to go and get regular first-team football with these playoffs and potentially the Euros in mind. And good luck to him. He's a brilliant guy. And as you say, he's had some really difficult times off the pitch. Scott's alluded to it there, Dean. Poland, they just always seem to be there or thereabouts when it comes to a major tournament, certainly in terms of qualification anyway. They beat Estonia 5-1 in their playoff semi-final. Estonia did have a man sent off very early in that game. Lewandowski started, didn't score, which is a surprise considering they got five goals. How big a step up in opponent is this for Wales?
I think it is, but I think Poland have been poor as well in major tournaments over the last decade.
They always get there, don't they? They always qualify.
Yeah, they do. But I actually think this is going to be really, really close. Because what Wales have got that Poland haven't is that kind of youthful speed about them. And Poland don't, but they have proven quality at the very, very highest level players and experience. So I think when you marry those two up between the two sides, I think that's what's going to make it interesting. You know, Wales brought on Dan James at the weekend. You know, that sort of pace that Poland are going to have to face at times. Kiefer Moore, another very difficult player to play against. But, you know, I think I do feel like this is such a great opportunity for Wales. And again, this would be a ridiculous achievement, again, for a country the size of Wales to qualify for another major tournament with the resources they've got. I mean, it just says so much about them as a nation and what they've been able to build in terms of the character within these squads and the link between themselves and the supporters. And you're right, it's going to need to be a collective effort with fans and players.
Yeah, the atmosphere in Cardiff is going to be red hot. Simon Jordan might disagree with some of his comments building up to the Finland game, but I think it'd be great if we could get three home nations there. England and Scotland have already qualified. Wales will certainly bring a lot to the party as well. We'll have extensive updates from that game during England against Belgium on TalkSport on Tuesday. Elsewhere at the weekend, Germany picked up a confidence-boosting victory over France. Kai Havertz of Arsenal on the score sheet once again. I think a lot of people, Scott, have sort of written Germany off after what we saw at the World Cup, but they are the hosts. Again, when it comes to a major tournament, quite often they manage to pull something out of the bag when you don't expect them to. Are they a potential dark horse in the draw?
Do you know what, Crookie? I honestly don't know. And up until this game against France, I'd have said no. Now, this will give them a lot of confidence. And to score after 8 seconds, I think certainly helps. You're basically starting the game 1-0 up. Not as quick as Darren Ambrose's goal, of course, in the TalkSport All-Stars game.
Wasn't even the fastest goal of the international weekend. There was a goal in the Austria game after 6 seconds.
That's right. Yeah, he beat him by a second or so. But I think what you've got in Julian Nagelsmann is a very clever coach. They've been so poor since they won the World Cup in 2014 that, and up until now, you're kind of thinking, no, I just don't see it. But you almost think, well, they're the Germans. They're going to come good. The tournament is at home. I still think they're sort of quarterfinals at very best semi-finals. But this, albeit France having some players out, Griezmann being one of them, Mbappe still played, and there were still some very good players against a very good France side. Maybe it told us more about France than it did about Germany and the mentality they had going into that particular game. But look, I think that's a great win for Germany, you have to say, and it's perhaps just given France a kick up the backside maybe that they needed.
We've alluded to this already, but Evan Ferguson did miss a penalty in that Ireland against Belgium game. 20 games without a goal for him for club and country. Now, of course, he's still only a young player, but this was somebody who, before he signed his new deal at Brighton, was being talked about as a possible £100 million target for the likes of Manchester United. Dean Ashton, I'm not sure you ever had a 20-game goal drought, but what advice would you give Evan Ferguson and what's happened to him?
Well, I had a very similar run of not scoring. I think it might have been 10 to 15 games, around very similar age to him as well, in terms of coming in, making a real impact, making it look easy and probably feel easy, this game, up against, you know, older top pros and scoring goals like it's just playing with your mates in the street, and then becomes the expectation. And if you also look at the fact that he's not really playing, he's sort of in and out, he's on the bench, yet we will still judge him on every single one of those games. If he comes on for 5 minutes or 50 minutes and doesn't score, well, it's another game you haven't scored. And people will then build that up and make it look like you are absolutely useless. When, if we really look at the amount of time he's played and had consistent game time, as in 4, 5, 6 games starting, which he hasn't had. De Zerbi, I actually think, has treated him quite poorly in that sense, when you've got somebody that's got the talents that he has. And then the penalty misses confidence, because you then lose that feeling as a young player that it's easy. You start to feel the pressure yourself. He'll come through it. He's a brilliant player. And again, it, of course, it's difficult to watch and it's easy to put the numbers up there. But if you look at it as a whole, he's going to be a terrific player.
Just before we go, we have to talk once again about profit and sustainability. We were actually in the bar, Dino, at the TalkSport Trophy on Friday night when we heard that Leicester had been charged by the Premier League. Now, this is an interesting one, because I think Leicester tried to exploit a bit of a loophole by not handing in their accounts to the EFL to get away with not being sanctioned by them because they claim they're a Premier League club at the time when those accounts were filed, and they were trying to get off a Premier League charge because they're now a Championship club. It looks like any points penalty will be applied next season. That's not going to go down well with the likes of Southampton and Leeds and Ipswich, who are competing with them for promotion back to the Premier League. Legally, this could be a bit of a minefield.
Well, I'll tell you what, you need to answer your own question there really quickly, because you'll know about this more than us. But, you know, all I can say is, yeah, well, you know, the offshoots and the legal routes that people might want to go down, as you've mentioned, of those teams. I mean, look, how can it get sorted before the end of the season? No, it can't. It's too late on, especially with appeals and all kind of stuff like that. So it has to go into the summer. We all, I think, agree that we don't want the end of the season. And we talk about the Premier League with this as well. Don't want it to be decided after the Premier League season finishes. So in one sense, absolutely take it into the following season. But I would imagine from a legal point of view, and I'm no lawyer, that the other clubs in the EFL chasing that automatic promotion spot and don't get it and don't go up would have a case on their hands.
What I'm finding, and Crookie, you can maybe sort of give some clarity on this as well, because I know we're in the bar, but you were still actually across it. To me, it seems as if, obviously, since these sort of legislations have been brought in, it's almost like clubs are trying to get back in line, because for years they've obviously almost had free rein, and they're now having to claw their way back. And some clubs seemingly haven't been able to do that. And also the authorities aren't in line in terms of with the legality of it all. Are they able to do it quick enough? You know, it's almost as if no one's quite still ready for all of this, Crookie. And then, you know, we could now be left with a situation like Scott's talked about where it's not sorted by the end of this. That would be absolute madness. And it would be a terrible stain on the Premier League and its integrity if that happens. How do we get around? How do we get around it?
Well, I think it's almost impossible to get around it when it comes to Leicester, because they're also not subject to the same timescales that, say, Forest and Everton are, because they're not a Premier League club. The rules have been changed, actually, in terms of trying to get everything sorted by a certain date since they left the Premier League. So they can legally drag their heels for as long as they want. This might not be sorted for several months. When it comes to Forest and Everton have their independent commission for their second PSR charge this very week, I think that will be sorted before the final round of fixtures. It simply has to be, otherwise it damages the brand almost irreparably. We will, of course, keep you up to date with all that across the TalkSport network. Busy week as well in terms of live football. England-Belgium Tuesday night on TalkSport. We've got Women's Champions League action on Wednesday as Chelsea host Ajax in the second leg of their quarter-final. That's live on TalkSport 2 at 8 o'clock. Good Friday, Easter weekend on the horizon. Four live championship commentaries on TalkSport 2, plus the usual around the ground service with Adrian Durham on TalkSport. I think Dean and I are pretty much at a game every day over Easter. We'll be back on Thursday afternoon looking ahead to all the big Premier League games.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds, we set them. Form guides, we've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.